Family law. This is your guide for weeks 10 and 11, where we're going to talk about child support. And I posted some slides. I also ask that you, before you listen to or watch this guide, you go and review the statute, the Illinois statute. And it's going to be important for you to do that. It'll be very helpful for you to do that. As we look at child support, we're going to talk about the origins and effects of child support, the typical guidelines for support obligations, and then how Illinois addresses child support. So again, it's going to be real important for you to stop and go and read 750 ILCS 5/505, and at least read it through once, maybe twice, before you listen to this or watch this and go along with the slides. There's no other reading. There's no other request that you do anything else. So please do that. Assuming you've done that, the guideline formulas for child support in Illinois, it's based on percentages of income on, and you know, some states, and in the past to some degree Illinois has looked at income shares, but percentages of income is what you are going to find in most child support schemes. We look at the income of the custodial parent, and remembering what we just discussed last week on that whole custody visitation and where we are with parenting time and responsibilities, and our current statute gets back to who has the kid the most. Sometimes we consider the income of a new partner. It's not directly considered, but indirectly it does impact circumstances. Especially if the new partner is in the home or providing the home that the custodial parent resides in with the child. So that's kind of a less of a, or more of a gray area than maybe it once was. Income and resources of the child. Sometimes a child has resources. Sometimes a child has some sort of income or trust fund or something like that, or resources that come from other people or sources than the parents. Multiple families, when you look at the statute, multiple families. We've discussed since day one in this course that the stats on divorces and the fact that second marriages and sometimes third and fourth more marriages exist. If there's children born of each of those, then it becomes an issue when we start to talk about resources that are available for those children. And so those are factors that we look at. Any extraordinary expenses, you know, expenses that are beyond the norm or beyond ordinary that may be related to the physical or mental condition or health of the child or special needs of the child or anything like that. And we'll look at that. And you saw that if you've read the statute, how that's taken into consideration. Health insurance, which is always seems to be in a state of flux nationally and in the state. But health insurance, that's a big one, right? I mean, those of you who are parents know that the largest expense, or the thing that you worry about, I guess, that sometimes is the largest expense other than food, clothing, and the general things that we sort of just do. But the one that comes up to challenge a budget for any parent are health expenses and whether or not you have good health insurance and health care, right? You want your child to have the best health care. And then the custody and visitation, so parenting time and responsibilities that we've just covered last week. How do we enforce or collect child support? Well, we can do a wage garnishment. We can have the employer subtract or collect child support owed and collect that and have it paid. Some states have agencies that handle this. If it's an arrearage, if somebody hasn't paid what they're supposed to pay, then we look maybe at liens, intercepting tax refunds, credit reporting. There are provisions that statutorily may impact someone's license to do something, including the license to drive a car. Generally, I always thought that was a bad idea, especially here in Mayberry, where everybody needs a car to get to groceries and work. And I mean, public transportation is not plentiful or available in some areas. So if you don't have the ability to drive a vehicle, well, that hurts opportunities to collect or to earn monies that could be used for child support. So probably not that productive. Termination of child support. Typically it's at emancipation or when a child reaches 18, but that's not always so. When a parent dies, obviously they can't pay child support. And then adoption or termination of parental rights. And when we get to adoption, we'll cover this a little more, but it's not uncommon, especially in related adoptions, for that parent who is going to give up their parental rights. So the adoptive parent, and in a related adoption, that's the step parent, can adopt the child. They usually have an arrearage owed, or many times have child support owed, or just never paid or had interest in the child. And so those obligations are terminated with the rights. But we'll again cover that when we get to adoption in more detail. Support beyond the majority, the adult student, college expenses. Some of you may have or may have had in the past this type of support. And then adults who have mental or physical disabilities, sometimes we extend that support beyond the age of majority. Now for Illinois, and you've read the statute, but it may not be abundantly clear. And so I'm going to try to summarize some things as best I can, as succinctly as I can. And then we'll discuss those things when we meet together live. But historically, Illinois courts have used a percentage-based formula for child support. As you've heard me talk about, family law statutes were revamped about 4 years ago. And since July of 2017, Illinois changed its child support formula from a percentage base to an income shares model. The general idea behind this type of calculation, or this update to how we calculate child support, is that both parents are responsible for their share of raising their child. So it's intended to be more equitable. The income shares model that the state uses considers both parents' incomes, in addition to data on how much parents typically spend on children if they would have remained living together and shared the finances. And we've crossed that bridge and had that discussion on a few other things, right? Goes back to our discussions about the considerations that people have when they move towards divorce, or how they move towards divorce. One of the biggest shocks is you had two incomes going into one household, and now you have two incomes that are going to have to support two households and all the expenses we all know and enjoy paying for in our own lives. So that's sort of the background. There are opportunities for adjustments, and judges in Illinois, the statute says they must, right? Must and shall, they don't have a choice. Judges in Illinois must begin their child support calculations using the state's approved formula. They can make adjustments if the guideline amount doesn't adequately address a child's best interest in light of factors that include the standard of living the child would have enjoyed had the parents stayed together, the child's physical and emotional condition or needs, the child's educational needs, and then the financial resources and needs of the child and both parents. So, you know, the court has some discretion, and it's not an easy call. It's not an easy ball strikes and outs umpiring call for a judge. So that's why you'll see in many cases judges pushing and pushing for settlement. I think we've discussed that most of us as lawyers don't come from a business or accounting background, and most of the judges may probably end up in that category. So it's A, something that we're not typically comfortable with, but B, it's a wide range. That strike zone is a large one. And so worrying about getting it right is one of the concerns. And it's best if the parties and the lawyers involved do the calculations and then work towards some sort of agreement. Now, in a case where it's appropriate, the court can add expenses to the guideline amounts for things such as daycare, for health care, for extracurricular activities, you know, all the things that kids do today that cost money, all the sports and et cetera, all those things. Private school tuition might be one of those. And a very high income parent may be able to pay more than the guideline amount, while a low income parent may be restricted in being able to pay what the guidelines suggest or be challenged. So a judge can deviate if either parent has those circumstances. They can also deviate when there's extraordinary medical expenses that one of the parents has, additional expenses due to a child's special needs, or you may have noticed, for any other reason that the judge believes the guidelines are inequitable and unjust or inappropriate. If a judge feels that those circumstances exist, they can deviate from the guidelines, but they have to place their reasoning in writing. And when I say place their reasoning in writing, they have to be able to explain their calculation. And we've covered that even before this week. I'll discuss it again, but it's very important to be able to explain your calculations. You, from your perspective, you have to be able to explain your calculations so that a client might understand. I have to be able to explain those calculations for my client to understand. It's going to be very important for them, and I'll stress this at the end of this discussion, but it's going to be very important for them to understand to the penny what they're expected to receive or what they're expected to pay. By the same token, in this circumstance, a judge has to be able to explain, especially if the matter were sent up on appeal to the appellate court, those calculations. So that's what that's talking about. The judges can deviate from the guidelines, but if they do so, they have to place their reasoning in writing. You're going to be expected to place your reasoning for how you reached whatever you determine a client should pay or be expected to receive. Sure, it's going to be in writing, but you're going to have to verbalize it too. You're going to have to be able to communicate that to your supervising lawyer and to maybe a client or to the supervising lawyer who will communicate it to the client. The math. Now I'm going to break this out into two parts. This is part one. To calculate child support in Illinois, you'll need to add up both parents' available net income. This includes all income, whether earned or unearned, minus any applicable or statutorily allowed adjustments as listed in the guidelines. Common examples of income are wages, commissions, self-employment earnings, investment income. Okay, all the things that you since this course is offered in the spring and we're less than a month away from tax day, you know well if you've done your own taxes or reviewed your own taxes to the level you should. Deductions under the guidelines include federal and state income taxes, Social Security tax, mandatory retirement contributions, union dues, health insurance premiums for the non-custodial parent or dependents, expenses necessary to produce income. So the things that if you're doing any self-employed things or you have a spouse or significant other who is, those things that you can deduct that are allowed to be deducted as you have expenses to produce income. Medical expenses necessary for life or health or any reasonable amounts already paid for the benefit of the child or the custodial parent, not including gifts. So those are the things that we consider income and the things we consider deductions. And that's how we get to net income. We take that gross of all income and then subtract the deductions. Next, we add both parents' net incomes together to find the combined adjusted net income. And then we look to the state's income conversion chart, and that's updated every year. And you find a basic support obligation for each parent. That's math part one. Luckily, under this format, one of the things that has been awesome from a teaching perspective is if we were in the classroom for this presentation, I would probably have to restate this a few times. You can go and just rewind and re-listen because it won't change. So if you need to, and if that seemed a little much or confusing, by all means, use that opportunity because it is one of the blessings and positives of me having to sit here in this classroom, which I'm still very thankful for, as opposed to some of my colleagues who are trying to do what I'm doing right here from the kitchen table of their house with little kids still running around. So that's one of the blessings of being old and having the empty nest. Go back and review if you need to, because I'm moving on to part two. So part two, after you determine the basic support obligation, you have to refer to the state's income share schedule. And from there, you determine the amount of support for both parents. If parents are exercising shared parenting, meaning that both parents have overnight parenting time with the child of at least 146 times per year, you find the basic support obligation. You multiply it by 150% or 1.5 to estimate the shared expenses between both parents. Now, we've covered this just last week, and I've talked about it, and you may have people, and it's more likely today than, say, when, I was a kid, my parents were divorced in the early 70s. It was definitely not the norm or even common that people would exercise shared parenting in that split manner. And I shared that, that was the route that I had initially agreed to with my former spouse, and with all the good reasons that we discussed. Not everybody has that, so you make the adjustments and you look at the schedule and you have to make those adjustments. Again, if this doesn't make sense or you need to hear it again, rewind, okay? And we'll discuss it in class as well. One of the good things about the update, one of the good things about the resources that are available, I've been teaching this course. This is my 25th spring of teaching family law. And for much of that time, until 2016, or through 2016, I guess, you would have had to come to class with a pencil and an eraser and no calculator, and I would have made you go through different calculations that I would have requested from problems that I would have thrown at you in class. Problems that were similar to those that you would have encountered in the law firm. And sometimes we used a calculator, not often, but sometimes I allowed you to use a calculator, knowing that you had to explain those calculations. But there was a lot of wiggle room. The state provides you with the calculator, and it's linked to the slides, and you can find it online. But the Illinois Child Support Calculator, available from the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services Division of Child Support Services, DCSS for short. DCSS is a state agency responsible for helping families obtain child support payment orders, locate absent parents, establish paternity if necessary, and secure compliance with child support orders. Good agency to know. You can find more information about their services for both custodial and non-custodial parents on their website. But one of the things that you're going to do as part of our exercises and assignments this week is you're going to go and look at that calculator and play around with that calculator and look at their resources, because it is something that you can use, and you can go in there and you should have familiarity with it. The question that comes up, what if someone claims they have no income? What if they claim no income, or you have a person on, hopefully on the other side of your case, who is what we used to refer to as a deadbeat? I've had circumstances that I've represented someone and the other party intentionally tried to avoid having income that could be claimed. And, you know, a lot of times by doing things that were illegal or taking work for cash and then claiming they had no income. As you know from looking at the statute under Section 3.2, even if you don't have any income, you can still be held responsible for child support. If the court believes a parent is voluntarily unemployed or underemployed, working at a lower paying job than qualified for, or working few hours than the parent's able to work, the judge can look carefully at the reasons for the lack of income. And again, that's one of those strike zones that the judge has to umpire in. Unless the parent shows evidence of serious job hunting efforts or disability, a judge might base support on imputed potential income. Imputed income can be based on a parent's most recent job or a local job opportunity that the parent would qualify for, depending on training and experience. If there's no evidence of greater earning ability, a court will probably impute income at minimum wage. Some of you are familiar with some of this concept as far as like knowing what job opportunities are available, because you had administrative law where we looked at Social Security disability, which in part of that analysis has, the elements of what jobs are available and what somebody's able to do. So it's not far off from there as far as the judge's analysis and application of the law. And in my own experience, it depends on the judge. I did have a paternity case one time where the father was in college and trying to skirt or first refute or say that he wasn't the father. And then his family got involved and his family tried to hide that fact. And then they didn't want to have anything to do with the child and wanted to skirt all responsibility. And the excuse offered after we established paternity, with science, After we did that, the argument was, is that, you know, little Johnny was in college and little Johnny had no income. And so, you know, this was way before this, the current version of this statute, but thankfully I had a judge who heard my argument, which was essentially that even if little Johnny doesn't have any income, little Johnny should show some sort of responsibility towards this child. And the judge ended up ordering that the father had to pay $25 a month until graduation, which wasn't much, and obviously didn't go anywhere close to buying diapers or paying for the kids' food for that month. And this child turned out to be special needs, so Wade didn't. But at least was open with the provision that it would be reviewed upon graduation. So, you know, it's complicated. It's not an easy call, but no, it's there. So if somebody claims there's no income or they're skirting those responsibilities, or evidence indicates that they do have income, no, it's there. Change, modification, or termination would be the last thing that we need to discuss from the statute. And the idea here is that you don't want people running back and forth to the court to have child support changed or modified. And so the statute gives that guidance. A parent seeking modification of an existing child support order must show that there is a substantial change in circumstances since the last order, or that there is a discrepancy of at least 20%, no less than $10 a month, between the existing order and a new calculation using the guidelines. So substantial change in circumstances, one of the parties comes into a whole bunch of money, inheritance, whatever, their circumstances have changed drastically or whatever way. There's a discrepancy in income, and then you go back to the guidelines and the calculations and that percentage. Or they demonstrate that there's a need to provide for a child's health care needs through insurance or other means. So some change there. And that's not an unlikely thing, especially today. We've had all kinds of punning around about health insurance expectations. And we all know that you change jobs, health insurance changes. You know that even if you've been in your job for a while, employers may desire to change, or health insurers may desire to change coverage, premiums, whatever. So there's likelihood that there'll be changes in, you know, with health insurance. In Illinois, the obligation to support a child ends when the child turns 18, unless the child is attending high school full-time. So if they're still in high school full-time, but have reached age 18, in which case it continues until the child turns 19 or graduates from high school, whichever one happens first. The obligation may continue beyond 18 if the child is disabled or not capable of self-support. Judges in Illinois sometimes order a non-custodial parent to help with the expenses of a child over 19 when they're attending college. And here's a little extra credit moment to see if you've listened to this guy. If you post within the body of your response, what the expectations are for college, then I will consider a little extra credit for you and be prepared to discuss it when we meet. So that's change, modification, and termination. So now it's time to get to work. And we're going to do a little additional exercise for the remainder of this week, and next week we're going to move towards calculations. The bottom line is you have to be able to use the tools and to do the basic math required in these calculations. As I've stressed many times, and as some of you know firsthand, it's not enough to point to the results of the calculator. the client who's expecting to receive or the client who's expecting to pay child support is going to be very interested in understanding the calculations and to know that those calculations are correct to the penny. And if you're off by a penny or they think you're off by a penny, you're going to find out about it. We're going to get the phone call. So be prepared to explain your calculations. If you need basic math help, if this isn't one of your strong points, it wasn't one of my strong points either, don't hesitate to reach out and ask. Don't hesitate to use the resources that are available to you at Illinois Central College. And if you reach out and ask me, that's where I'm going to direct you. They're free. You know, they're well-planned. And they're available, and I will help coordinate those folks giving you some extra work or some extra help in basic calculations. Essentially, what we're talking about are those word problems that we used to do in grade school, right? So we're not talking about algebra. I still don't know what X is. We're talking about basic calculations that you need to be able to do in your everyday life that we sort of move away from every day anyway, because we just, you know, I spend money. I don't write a check anymore. And anytime I spend money, it gets updated right here on my phone, on my bank app. I don't even have to balance my checkbook or keep track of that or whether they're keeping track of it accurately. I guess I should look. But we still need to be able to do that. We still need to be able to explain it. So it's important that you be able to understand those basic calculations of adding, subtracting, multiplying, dividing based on the formulas that are provided, you know, by the statute and the facts of your client's circumstance and whoever they're getting divorced from or whoever's owed child support from or maybe paid child support to involved in your case. Because remember, child support has nothing to do with a marriage or a divorce, just like custody. A child is a child of the people that the child's born to. And marriage doesn't come into that, or divorce doesn't come into that necessarily. So if you need help, reach out. This is weeks 10 and 11 child support. And you'll use this guide for next week as well. Don't hesitate to go back and rewind and review it. I hope you stay well. I look forward to seeing you live.